President Trump calls for the resignation of Representative Adam Schiff, the lawmaker heading up House impeachment efforts. Plus, we'll examine Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani's role in the Ukraine controversy.
Was it simply the president's lawyer working rogue on this issue? Or did the president actually rope in government employees and government resources to pursue what essentially looks like to be a campaign issue?
And what two of the most valuable U.S. startups, WeWork and Juul, have in common. It's Friday, September 27th. This is the PM edition of What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli in New York. President Trump is calling for California Representative Adam Schiff to resign, saying Schiff misrepresented his conversation with Ukraine's leader. That call is at the center of a whistleblower complaint that alleges the president sought to coerce Ukraine to investigate former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter. Schiff has drawn criticism from Republicans who say his comments on Thursday were misleading. That's when Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire testified before the House Intelligence Committee. House Democrats are seeking more information from the White House on the holdup of nearly $400 million in aid to Ukraine, which was suspended about a week before President Trump's phone call with Ukraine's president. The aid was released earlier this month, but lawmakers are asking for more details about the timing of the delay and why it was suspended. President Trump has said he was concerned about corruption in Ukraine and that Europe wasn't paying its fair share. Consumer spending slowed in August, raising concerns that a global slowdown is spreading. Prior to August, spending rose an average of 0.5% a month for the first 7 months of the year. Consumer spending accounts for more than two-thirds of the nation's economic output. After 6 months of searching, Wells Fargo has named Charles Scharf, chief executive of Bank of New York Mellon, as its new CEO. Scharf had also worked at Visa and J.P. Morgan Chase. He succeeds C. Allen Parker at Wells Fargo. Parker had been serving as interim chief since Timothy Sloan resigned in late March. Four carmakers are expected to meet with the Justice Department next week as they face a federal antitrust investigation over an agreement they made with California to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Ford, Honda, BMW, and Volkswagen agreed to cut emissions by 3.7% annually for cars with model years 2022 to 2026. Those standards are stricter than those set by the Trump administration. The Wall Street Journal's Brent Kendall has more.
Companies can get together and talk about petitioning the government for regulations or for legislation. What they can't do is get together and agree privately to fix prices or to restrict output or to allocate markets or things like that. You know, many of the Justice Department's critics say that what the car companies were doing here was the kind of protected activity they're allowed to do in interactions with the government. The Justice Department says, well, we're not so sure, and we'd like to find out more information.
The Justice Department is also facing questions over its decision to investigate the issue. The Trump administration wants to revoke California's waiver to set its own emission standards. This week brought the resignations of CEOs at WeWork and Juul. Both raised billions of dollars in the private market as they pursued rapid growth. For more on the downsides of that Silicon Valley success formula, our Charlie Turner spoke with reporter Heather Somerville.
Heather, this week we saw the resignations of CEOs running two of the U.S.'s most valuable startups. Kevin Burns resigned as head of Juul Labs, the seller of vaping products. Adam Neumann, co-founder of WeWork, was forced to resign as CEO of the office space subleasing company. You write that both resignations share common roots. What are they?
The common roots with these companies are that they were able to raise enormous sums of money, billions and billions of dollars, while remaining in the private market. So they had the luxury of not having much transparency and not being subject to much regulatory oversight. And after a period of time, that really came back to bite both of these companies, compelling both CEOs to resign. We're talking about two very different scenarios in that the CEO of Juul was facing regulatory crackdown and a lot of serious concerns about the public health implications of vaping, while with WeWork, it was really a matter of management questions and huge losses that company was racking up. Now, where the similarities are in these two companies is how they got to this point. And both were founded with big visions, big sales pitches that they sold to investors, and that investors with starry eyes really believed in and handed over a bunch of money. With that money, there was a complete focus on growth at all costs and at disrupting existing industries, in this case for Juul, the cigarette companies, and for WeWork, traditional commercial real estate.
You talk about basically how the flood of late-stage funding from sovereign wealth funds, SoftBank, can do a lot of damage. Why don't you go into that?
This sort of money, these investors can write checks that are billions and billions of dollars, has done a couple things. One, it has allowed companies to stay private much longer. They don't have to have an IPO to raise money anymore. And two, these investors, some of them anyway, are doing very little in the way of governance, in the way of checks and balances. So these companies often get a boatload of money without strings attached. And the result of that is that companies can continue to operate in the private market without the transparency that is forced upon them in the public markets and get away with things for a long period of time, whether that's encouraging teens to take up vaping, as Juul has been accused of.
Heather, what have we heard from either Juul or WeWork?
Well, Juul has, over the last several months, really starting last fall, made several changes. It shut down its Instagram and Facebook accounts, which, of course, were widely seen, particularly by young people. It stopped selling certain flavors in retail stores, the flavors that were real popular with teenagers and children, like fruity flavors and dessert flavors. It also overhauled its marketing. WeWork started to make some changes over the last few weeks as really it faced more pressure from investors and concern about how that company was run. These are primarily sweeping governance changes. WeWork, for instance, reduced the voting power of CEO Adam Neumann. It made changes to succession plans at that company, and it ensured there'd be an independent director on the board. And this is in addition to really slashing its planned valuation by about half in an IPO that now has been delayed.
Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Somerville joining us from San Francisco. Thanks a lot, Heather.
Thanks so much.
Now we're going to dig a little deeper into the role of former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's personal lawyer. Giuliani pressed Ukraine into pursuing an investigation into Trump's political rival, Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden, putting him at the center of the House's impeachment inquiry into the president. A team of our reporters from Washington to Kiev investigated his role in the controversy, among them our Brett Forrest, who joins me now in our studio in New York. So tell us more about what you and your colleagues dug into regarding Giuliani's role in all of this, how you reported out this story, and what you were able to find out.
He really is at the center of this whole thing, principally because, given his relationship with the president, he's able to sort of act as a middleman, sort of officially, unofficially out there on the road. It's hard for people in other countries to quite figure out if he's representing himself and his company, chasing security contracts, or if he's actually representing the president of the United States. Having said that, folks abroad, quite frankly, have decided that this is the guy they have to please if they want to get something from the president.
Yes, I found it very interesting how you delve into the difference between how Giuliani is seen in Washington versus how he's seen in Ukraine, where he's viewed as somewhat of a celebrity.
Oh, for sure. And let's not single out Ukraine. I mean, Rudy Giuliani is world famous. I mean, he's America's mayor. And not only that, but before that, we know about his history as a prosecutor and his achievements there. So folks all around the world, especially in developing countries, look to him and people like him to help them with some of the challenges they face in law enforcement and also governmental issues. So when Rudy Giuliani shows up in a foreign capital, he usually has a lot of people who'd like to see him. So that's very much true in Ukraine, and specifically in Ukraine, I think there are a lot of people who saw him as a political mentor, who saw him as an inspirational leader. So as one person told me in Kiev, they said, look, we don't see a lot of mayors of New York around here.
Okay, so that's Ukraine. Now, what about officials in Washington who expressed some concerns about Giuliani's role here?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't say some concerns. I would say quite a few concerns and fairly constant concerns, because he was not only in Ukraine, but he was in other countries and also sending letters to foreign leaders and contacting them by phone and sort of confusing people. And also, he was taking positions and he was saying things that were sometimes seeming to go contrary to policy set by the State Department. So I know a lot of State Department officials were simply exasperated by this guy. What is he doing? What is his role? Why is he getting in the middle of all this? Obviously, they take their responsibilities very seriously. And then suddenly Rudy shows up on the scene and everything turns a little chaotic. So I know that Rudy Giuliani was planning for a spring trip to Kyiv. He talked about it publicly. Of course, this got a lot of press. He ultimately didn't go, as you remember. And my sources were telling me that one of the reasons he didn't end up going is because there was such a hue and cry in Washington. And there was just so much pressure to sort of forbid him from going. And that's what ended up happening.
So what were you able to find out specifically about Giuliani's role regarding this whistleblower complaint?
Right. Well, he started putting himself on the record on many of his TV appearances in the last year, talking about Ukrainian corruption, and then beginning to hint about the Burisma issue.
That being the board of the Ukrainian company Hunter Biden sat on.
Yes, exactly. So Rudy Giuliani started talking about this publicly, and it wasn't really until July 11th of this year when there was a gentleman named Andrei Yermak who visited Washington. He is a close advisor to the current president of Ukraine, Zelensky. Yermak and others from Kyiv, including their national security advisor, were visiting Washington primarily to set up Zelensky's first visit to Washington, which hasn't taken place yet. During that visit, the advisor to Zelensky was a little bent out of shape by the fact that Rudy was going on TV and bad-mouthing Ukraine. So he got his phone number, he called him, and he said, hey, would you mind toning down these statements? And at that time, our reporting shows that Giuliani said, well, why don't we talk about this Burisma issue with Hunter Biden? And Andrei Yermak said, sure, let's talk about it. They subsequently met in Madrid. And that's when they spoke more in detail about it. Now, my sources have told me that Yermak from the beginning said, listen, this is a Ukrainian sovereign issue. If our prosecutor general deems this worthy of investigation, we will pursue it. Otherwise, we won't. And that's it. We know, of course, that it hasn't ended and the discussion continues on it.
So as you continue your reporting, what questions are you left with now?
One of the major questions that we'd like to answer is, how broad was the effort to encourage, let's say, Ukrainian authorities to look into the Burisma issue? Was it simply the president's lawyer working rogue on this issue? Or did the president actually rope in government employees and government resources to pursue what essentially looks like to be a campaign issue? That is, I imagine, that would be a real red line right there. Rudy Giuliani, he's not in the government. That's one thing. Using government resources, of course, is something else. So that's one major inquiry that we're looking at.
That's The Wall Street Journal's Brett Forrest. Rudy Giuliani has called the full whistleblower complaint, which was released publicly this week, really ridiculous. He also said he's baffled by the complaint's allegation that the U.S. State Department was concerned over his work in Ukraine. For our full and continuing coverage of this story, please head to our website, wsj.com. And that's what's news for this Friday afternoon. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.